Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I thank you for joining us. Now, at the very top, we need to take this opportunity to wish Sir Alex Ferguson a speedy recovery. I've had the privilege of spending some time with him on several occasions. He played a key role in when I wrote The Italian Job together with Gianluca Vialli a few years ago. Obviously, right now, football is less important, and all that matters is that he get well soon, and he's got so many people pulling for him. So get well soon, Sir Alex. Now, as you can imagine, because it's Bank Holiday Monday and people are all off with their families, it's been a struggle to get people in. So the only guys I was able to get in this weekend were James Gearbrandt, who, of course, is still very much a single man around town, right? You don't have... You don't have a partner and children, yes, in tow?
No.
So you're forced to come in and work. There you go. Very eligible bachelor, I might add. And Julian Lawrence, who does have a family, but of course they don't like him and they send him away at every opportunity.
Exactly.
Later on, we're going to be discussing the latest addition to the Premier League, Cardiff City. But first, let's start with last year's champions and this year's Champions League finalists at Stamford Bridge. James, you were at this game. As it turned out, it kind of really, really mattered given the some of the poor results that Liverpool had leading up to this game, which they can attribute to their focus on the Champions League. I was kind of expecting something rip-roaring. It was actually just kind of tight and rather flat.
Yeah, I think Liverpool certainly, as a kind of attacking force, were not, it was probably one of their weakest performances of the season, to be honest, and that probably contributed to it being it not having that kind of rip-roaring end-to-end feel. As you say, I think it was also probably a return to form for Antonio Conte, in the sense that I always kind of think of Antonio Conte as being maybe not the kind of manager who will stay at a club for 7 seasons and create a dynasty and sort of implement a Conte philosophy, but I always think of him as being a very, very good manager. If you sort of say to him, you know, one-off game against a very good team and you've got to sort of, you know, game plan your way through it. And although we had some of that this season, that there was the win against Tottenham at Wembley, there was the good first leg performance against Barcelona, since the turn of the year, actually some of the Chelsea's results against the big teams have been really quite poor. It almost seemed like, you know, there were sort of the questions of has the team stopped playing for him. So from that point of view, I think it was a real return to form for Conte, because it was obviously a very effective game plan. He nullified that Liverpool attack, which has been so devastating against so many teams this season, to an extent that we've really seen quite rarely this season.
So you give credit to Conte, maybe give Liverpool a pass, given that they had this big, draining, I think emotionally and physically, Champions League game in midweek against Roma. They still have Sean, Lallana, and Oxlade-Chamberlain out in midfield, which means, you know, less rotation. We saw Alexander-Arnold start in the middle of the park. All told, this is not surprising, right? When Chelsea all week to prepare, these other guys are drained and a bit of a hangover.
I think they look tired. I think they look tired against Roma in that second leg as well. And I think when they don't have the energy that they need, and if the opposition play, you know, the way that you should be playing against them. So yeah, I think they had 64% possession or 69% possession yesterday. And they tried a bit, but I think if they don't have that sort of extra intensity, extra energy, especially the three up front, I think they struggle a bit.
See, the three up front, Mohamed Salah has rightly only had positive press this season. I don't think anybody has said anything negative about him, nor has he done anything negative about it. I think he gets booked for diving in this game. I honestly don't remember. Is it the first time this season he's been booked for diving?
Yeah, I think so.
Does that spoil things a little bit for? I don't think he's even been accused. I mean, we're not talking sort of, you know, he's not a Welbeck or Sterling or a Zaha. He's not somebody who has that rep. Is that also maybe why the dive looked Dele Alli? Funny, we've all only mentioned English players there, but hey, let's just hope the English habit of diving in dark arts doesn't creep into the continental, especially the Latin game.
But
is that why he looked so silly when he decided to take a dive, that he's just not really good at it? Or
And I think it's the tiredness as well. I think when, you know, no, really, when it's not going, you know, as well as you've been so used to this season, I think you know, and you don't feel 100%, and you know, surely at some point, all those games he played, and that takes a toll, I think, on you, and you do things that you don't usually do. I really believe it. And that dive looks so unlike. I mean, you're right. He didn't really know how to do it. You know, he was clearly like, some are very good at it. He's clearly not good at it, which is a good thing, because that means he probably won't do it again. And it was out of character. And I think Klopp was right. He's better than that anyway. But yeah, I think he didn't look like himself. And the interesting thing as well is that very low amount of touches again against like Roma. And if you look at it, and it's in the game this morning, on Monday morning, those games where you have very low touches, so Chelsea, for example, didn't score. Against Spartak Moscow in the Champions League, didn't score. Against Hoffenheim in the Champions League playoff, low touches, didn't score again. He scored, I think, against Arsenal, but didn't score against Roma, similar last week as well. So I think when he's not involved, when he's either well-marked or a bit tired or a bit out of fitness or out of pace, he's pretty anonymous for this team.
I think the obvious point to make is that Liverpool do not have, I mean, it's an understatement to say they do not have a lot in reserve behind that front three at the moment. They've got Danny Ings, Dominic Solanke and Ben Woodburn on the bench. I mean, they're probably going to be on the bench for the Champions League final. I mean, that first choice front three is just beginning to look at this stage of the season just a little bit jaded. I think, you know, particularly when you have a kind of a system that really relies on, you know, pace and dynamism and quick interchanges. You know, maybe when you're more of a kind of defensive or counter-attacking team, like, for example, the Leicester and the Chelsea teams that won the title in the previous two seasons, maybe you can really ride the one starting 11 all the way through to the end of the season. But,
well, I mean, I just, even the fact that we saw Henderson on the bench, I mean, these are guys who really, really just push themselves to the limit. And I think the best possible news, in fact, I'm sure Jurgen Klopp on Friday night, wherever he was when you watched the Brighton United game, it just must have been celebrating, because he knows that game, the last day of the season at Anfield, you know, I'm not saying Brighton are going to be on the beach or they're not going to try, but it's obvious they're not going to have the same intensity. So hopefully nobody gets injured, a lower pace game. Maybe you can take some guys off at halftime, and then you've got 13 solid days, because you don't just need Salah fit. Not just Salah, obviously the other guys too. Although Mane, I thought looked lively.
First half, Mane
has been, I think, I mean, I would say more so in the second leg against Roma, but in those sort of two games combined, I think he's possibly been Liverpool's best player,
best attacking player, games. Probably. Yeah. On the Chelsea point, were you surprised by Giroud's mini revival? How he was just mocked mercilessly at Arsenal. It gets to the point where Arsenal go and they sign, oh, look, let's sign another center forward, and then we'll get another one in January because, you know, you may be very handsome, Olivier, but, you know, you're not good. And then he moves to a team that's ahead of Arsenal in the table and, you know, certainly carves out a space for himself. Are you surprised, or does this fit what Giroud does?
No, I'm not surprised. I always thought that he was a good fit for this Chelsea team, that they would play on his strength, which they did. I was more surprised by the fact that Conte had that period in March where didn't play him that much. And the game that turned things around is that Southampton away game where he came on, scored two goals, they were 2-0 down, they won 3-2. And since then he started every single game. And he He was confident before the game because he has an amazing record against Liverpool. I think he scored. He was on four in his last five against them. Now he's 5-6, home and away. And I think he had a feeling before the game that he would score and he would do well against them. Yeah, I just don't understand why Conte did. And I said that last time I was on the pod. Why Conte didn't play more regularly at a time where Chelsea was trying. I know, but I mean, I don't think since he moved there at the end of January, I don't think there's even a contest between the two. And I may be biased, maybe, but
sure. No. I mean
I don't know what scored against Leicester in the FA Cup, for example.
Instead of giving Conte credit for bringing him in, actually playing him ahead of Morata, even when Morata's fit, the club is a fool for not playing him even more.
No. There was a period where he was on the bench a lot,
Who's the better player? Not this season and so
come on.
No, but
you of all people, don't give me that.
No, I like Giroud a lot. I was sticking up for him. I thought he got a bit of a raw deal, but I also think obviously when Morata has a higher ceiling than Giroud. Can we agree on that?
Yeah,
he's faster. He's more skillful. Okay. He's a better passer.
Yeah. Between the beginning of August,
both are really handsome. So you can't.
Between the beginning of August and October.
Is this the most handsome attack in world football?
I was thinking on that point. In the piece that I wrote drawing the sort of the comparison between Conte's front two when he was with Italy of Eder and Graziano Pella, who is also very handsome. So
yeah, Eder a bit less so.
but the centre forward, I mean.
Now, on a more serious note, top four, we're going to get to Spurs in a minute and their Spursiness. We should also bear in mind, Liverpool fans, if our conversation depresses you, you can still get to the Champions League by actually winning it, right? So that's the big out that they have should they drop into fifth place, which is possible. Liverpool have one game left, obviously, as I mentioned. It's Brighton at home. If Liverpool win that game, they're pretty much guaranteed a top four finish, yes? Because their goal difference is a lot better than Chelsea's. It's like plus 15 right now. Chelsea would have to go and score a bazillion goals, and that's not going to happen. If they draw or lose, then it's squeaky bum time. Chelsea have Huddersfield at home, which is, I think, a winnable game, although it's tough because Huddersfield aren't mathematically safe yet. And they have Newcastle away with Rafa, last game of the season and so on. Spurs have Newcastle at home and Leicester at home. Now, Spurs, they've played the same number of games as Chelsea. They're 2 points clear. Again, I think to be fully safe, they need to win both, because if they win one and draw one, it's a 9-goal swing vis-a-vis Chelsea. I mean, they should be fine, but, you know, stranger things have happened. It's still highly improbable, I think, that Chelsea will finish top four unless Spurs lose one of their two remaining games. Also, Claude Puel, we're reporting today that he's gone from Leicester. Yeah. Leicester, I think, as a club, have...
Holidays.
I mean, seriously, on the beach situation. Newcastle, who knows? I mean, I think Newcastle may be the bigger threat. I think Rafa Benitez can maybe trip them up. But anybody here want to stake a strong claim for why Chelsea will be in the Champions League next year?
I agree with you. I don't think they will. I think Liverpool is still, I think you'd have to say, in a good position. I mean, clearly they are. They've got one game left to go against a team whose season, to all intents and purposes, is done and have nothing left to play for. And clearly you would back Liverpool to beat Brighton every time. Of the two, I think you'd probably almost be a bit more worried about Spurs. I mean, they've got two games left and they have completely lost momentum, and I think problems which we'll get to with Kane's fitness, etc., etc. Evidently, they're two very winnable games because they're two teams in mid-table. They're at home. Leicester, pretty much gone, as we've said. Newcastle have had a great season but are in mid-table and don't have much left to play for. A month or 6 weeks ago, you would have said Tottenham, clearly a superior team to Chelsea. Well, and now you sort of feel like if the season went on sort of three more, you know, if we had five more games to go as opposed to two more games,
the momentum has shifted. Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. 6 weeks ago, April Fool's Day, Chelsea playing Spurs at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea take the lead and then end up losing 3-1. 3-1, yeah. I thought this is where Chelsea kissed the Champions League goodbye. Had they even just scrambled a point from that game, they would be very much, I think, in control at this stage. Time for Goal of the Week, because this season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, and the FA Cup. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. My favorite part is that, in addition to the goals, you also get our lovely content and writing, including some of my favorites, who I seem to mention every week, so I won't mention George Culkin for the umpteenth time. I'll give a shout-out to one Gregor Robertson, who is one of those ex-pros who can actually write, and actually write creatively, and write well. And, if you're into lower league football, he even got me interested in it, so definitely worth checking out. Anyway, I digress. James, what was your favourite goal of the weekend in the Premier League?
I liked the final home goal ever overseen by Arsene Wenger at the Emirates, which was Aubameyang's second against Burnley.
What, the one that he took in such a weirdo way?
Completely, and that's why I really liked it. Obviously, good cross by Bellerin, but the finish was so odd. As you say, odd. Sort of taking it almost, he almost kind of feathered it, almost kind of with the outside of his boot, although
you're making a hand gesture, which people on the podcast can't see, but you're basically saying he hit it with the outside of the boot, but it still went straight.
Exactly.
Right, when the standard thing to do there, Julian, you're a technical expert, would have been to side foot it, yeah?
Yeah, completely, yeah. Lacazette did, very similar goal.
Lacazette is actually, he's got maybe the purest technique of... maybe any striker I can. I mean, I'm sure there's others. I'm not saying he's got the best technique.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is Mr. Textbook. Like in the manual that the FFF produces to show you how the game of football is played, they could just have Lacazette.
Yeah.
And nobody else.
And he took the Bellerin's cross with the inside of his left, and I don't think he even came in his mind that he could take it like Rami, you know, with the outside of the right. And
what's your goal, Julian?
So I like the Kolasinac goal because I like what Jack Wilshere did before, but because
the Arsenal goal.
Exactly.
So I'll go
for Mark Noble, which was
a thunder bastard.
Yeah, and I think this one was the standout one. It's a great volley, 30 yards out. It took it really well. Maybe if there's a slight deflection, but I don't think it mattered too much. And it's also that, you know, sealed the win. They stayed up for what could have been a quite tense end of the season otherwise.
He's the captain, homegrown player,
the and
academy,
the third best scorer in the Premier League for West Ham, something like that. Ridiculous. I know a lot of them came from penalties, but still, you know, good on him.
All right, we're totally in Twilight Zone territory here. West Bromwich Albion taking on Spurs. Darren Moore has got 11 points from a possible 15. Or when he was appointed, Scoey, who knows him well, was in the studio, and he's like, oh, he's a super nice guy, and he's so big. Other than Darren Moore's size and the fact that he's a very good person, it was almost like, we have no idea what this guy's going to bring. What we probably did suspect was that he'd do a better job than the guy who came before him, but that's because it's Pards. Nobody would have imagined 11 points from 15 games against this standard of opponent. Do we have any idea what he's actually doing to make this work? Is he just not Pardew? Is he just bringing a better attitude?
I do think that as much as I hate to kick Pards when he's down, I do think there is a lot of value in simply being not Pards from the point of view of one thing I was thinking of with regards to this is talk about something completely different. Sitting in the Champions League semi-final press conference and listening to Zinedine Zidane and Jupp Heynckes and Toni Kroos.
And you were thinking of Alan Pardew.
I wasn't thinking of Pardew at that stage. But they all talked about the importance. Each one of them in their press conference slightly downplayed tactics and all really talked about the importance of kind of mood and positivity and harmony in the camp, which is something that we don't love to talk about because maybe it's not that interesting and maybe, you know, tactics are more fun to talk about. I also don't want to, you know, I don't want to underplay Darren Moore's tactical strengths because clearly he's come in and set them up very well. But I do think the effect of simply having a positive mood and, you know, removing a cloud that's kind of been hanging over a team can be absolutely enormous, and I do think that's partly what we're seeing here. The other point.
Carvajal is the same as Swansea, and he didn't last for long. He came in and he was funny, and the players said, "Yeah, that's great."
Well, I completely agree with that. And another example would be Craig Shakespeare. Craig Shakespeare came in at
Shakey
came in at the end of last season. I think we can all agree that Shakey is not necessarily a tactical genius, but
better than Pards.
Well, quite. I mean, he actually had a very, very good record, particularly a really, really strong record at the end of last season when he came in. For whatever reason, things had gone very stale under Ranieri. Shakespeare came in and I think he won 5 on the bounce. And we're sort of always a little bit surprised by it, but it kind of, you know, I think there's an example sort of most seasons.
Remember, you have a chance to remove Pardew, which is obviously an opportunity you always want to take. And also, you're replacing him with somebody who's already on staff. It's not like, I mean, I don't know if they're paying him any extra money, but, you know, I think it would have been different. I think they went into it as like, let's just get this guy out of here and let's have Darren Moore because he's already here. Let him get some experience and then who knows. I mean, it's a different mindset had they said, like, let's replace Pardew with an actual manager that we have to pay for and give a contract to and whatever, as opposed to a guy who's in-house.
If you go down by a point, surely you must think like, you know, had we sacked Pardew before and replaced him? And, you know, I know there's an if, and but surely if they come that close of staying up with more, you must have thought like, why on earth did we keep Pardew for so long? It clearly wasn't working.
Go back far enough and say, why on earth did we sack Pulis?
I know we can't go back, but you see what I mean? Because the momentum, I know no one would have expected that, but and just to finish on that, I also think that Moore got in and everybody had written them off. And I think he said, listen, we're down anyway. We're pretty much down. So just go out there and you know, and it's much easier, I think, in that situation than if you're just over the bottom three and the tension is still there and you're like, it was a bit with Carvalho, it was the same.
I tell you what I think is really interesting is what happens next at the end of this season. Clearly, you could not ask for Darren Moore to have done a better job, and there will be a lot of goodwill behind him, a lot of reasons to think, you know, there will be a lot of kind of a big argument to give him the job. On the other hand, I would say the kind of historical evidence for giving caretaker managers the full-time job is not great. And Craig Shakespeare will probably be the most recent example of that, but there are kind of umpteen others.
It's a different skill set, right?
And there are also, I think, you know, there are potentially some really interesting candidates for that West Brom job, whether that be Michael Appleton or indeed Graham Potter.
This guy from Östersund.
Yeah, well, I think he'd be a really interesting candidate. And so I think it will be interesting.
I think Moore would be an interesting candidate too, if you
want. I'm just saying I think that it will be interesting to see how that developed.
I think everybody would cheer them on. It would be a fantastic story if they stayed up. This is what needs to happen for them to stay up. So basically, they need Swansea and Southampton to draw on Tuesday night, which is a possibility. They need to win away to Palace on the last day of the season, which is a possibility, and I think it would be kind of unkind of Palace to not let them win. The problem is they also need Southampton to lose their last game of the season, which is against Manchester City at home, entirely possible, and to lose heavily as well, because they need basically a 4-goal swing against Southampton. That's possible, I suppose, and because Guardiola keeps talking about how he wants to get the record and stuff, so they were certainly helped by the 0-0 draw this past weekend. I think the difficult part is they need Swansea to draw Southampton and
lose it against Stoke at home.
At home to Stoke. I think that's the part that's going to be kind of really, really difficult given that Stoke have been relegated. But I think most neutrals wish them well. The fact that we spent so much time talking about West Brom means we've got less time to talk about Tottenham and this weird implosion that's going on. There's a lot of strands to pull at. We've tried to parse Pochettino's words when all of a sudden he says, well, if I'm here or if another dude is here. There's the Kane factor. Maybe August and May don't agree with him. First of all, look,
he has been very good in May in the past.
Well, not this May.
Not this May, true.
Maybe, in fact, this May is dismay. I'm good. No, you alluded to Kane's fitness. Mm. Is it a fitness issue? And wearing my three lion shirt, should I be worried?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Kane has been the same player since he came back. I mean, I don't know whether his... It was ankle, wasn't it? He rolled his ankle against Bournemouth. I mean, I don't know whether the ankle is troubling him, and obviously Poch says not, which is what you'd expect him to say. But, I mean, Kane just clearly has not been anywhere near as effective since he came back. It's kind of a nuanced issue, isn't it? Because at this stage of the season, who is playing at 100%? You know, if Kane's playing at 80%, you know, that's not necessarily entirely different from, you know, half the players in the league. So from that point of view, I guess it...
I think the whole goal is mine, is not mine, is Eriksen. I think that's troubled him as well. I really do. I think he didn't really like the reaction. I think he didn't understand the reaction and why suddenly people were criticising him, why other players were taking the mic, were, you know, and I think that bothers him. And he, you know, he's also very dependent of the team. You know, he's not Messi or Ronaldo. He can't win games by himself. It's impossible. Well, and he got chances on Saturday. Didn't take them.
This is a point. This is a point, actually, I wanted to make, because we focus so much on Kane, right? And part of it is because, you know, Christian Eriksen's more low-key. We only seem to mention Eriksen when he plays really well, which is often, because he's a very good player. But I made the point before that I didn't think Dele Alli was having a great season. And then it's almost become fashionable to say, oh, look, you're thick. You just say that because he's scoring and assisting less, but he's playing in a different role, which is far more important. And I'm like, is he? Has he actually played well? There's been the odd performance, but I don't think he's been consistent at all. And he's not scoring goals or playing further back.
I agree with you. And I'm sorry, you will always judge him by, you know, why he produces going forward. I don't care if he plays a bit deeper or a bit more on the wing and if he trails back or not. You know, he's not creating enough, he's not scoring enough, he's not assisting enough. Apart from the Chelsea game away, which we mentioned before, where it looked like the Dele Alli of last season, I thought he's been so average. I really did. And I think the problems he had off the pitch, you know, agent issues, private issues, didn't help at all at his age, and I don't think he was ready for all of that. And you know, and I think it's just not easy to be consistent at that age and at the level that he showed before.
The other point I would make is that there is still relatively little backup to that first choice Spurs front four. It seems like we've been talking about this for three seasons now, but I personally,
if you're about to criticise Lamella, watch it.
I was going to steer clear. I was going to steer clear of Lamella entirely. Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't going to criticise Lucas, but I was going to say I'm maybe surprised that he hasn't got more minutes.
But that's not his fault.
Well, no, that's the point I'm making. Okay. The other thing is clearly, Poch doesn't trust Llorente. I think he's started one league game, and you have to say that you know, for the second season running, has been, you know, the striker that they have signed to back up Kane has been a massive bust, really.
I love Poch, but yeah, I don't get that, because you know Llorente can do a job in the Premier League because you've seen him do it. And if it means you have to mix things up, there's enough talent elsewhere. And I think there's too much pressure and too much focus on Harry Kane. You can't keep him responsible for everything. And
I agree. And even if you don't fancy Llorente for whatever reason, you know, play Lucas Moura and play Son up front. That's exactly what I'm going to say.
There's another factor in this, just kind of lost, because Spurs don't like to talk about it. But I think Tottenham's best defender has, been missing for 6 months? And Alderweireld. And it's an injury, but then there's a contractual issue. There's an injury, and then if you ask Poch about it, he doesn't like talking about it.
I know.
Anybody know what's actually going on?
I think it's pretty clear that they don't play him much because he doesn't want to sign that extension and they will have to sell him this summer. Otherwise, the release clause is 25 million and he's worth three times that. And I just think, for me, I don't, you know, no one told me, but for me, the only reason he's not playing more, it's not because Davinson Sanchez is, you know, he's a Franz Beckenbauer suddenly.
No.
It's simply because of that contractual situation. And then they play him three at the back on Saturday, and you think, like, really?
Slipping back to the relegation, Stoke are down. Who's going to join them? Just empty prediction time. Anybody want to say that West Brom will not be going down? No. Okay, so that's one out of the way. So it's Swansea, Southampton, and theoretically Huddersfield, but I assume Huddersfield are fine.
I thought Huddersfield would go down, I have to say. I didn't think they'd get a point at City, and I thought they would lose the last three games and they would go down. So I have to stick with that. They still need 2 points from the last two games against Chelsea and Arsenal. So I will still go for Huddersfield going down, and both Swansea and Southampton to stay up.
Wow.
I know.
I think at the start of the season we all did our little predictions, and I think I predicted Brighton, Huddersfield and Swansea. And I think, obviously, I'm going to be very wrong about Brighton. I think probably going to be wrong about Huddersfield as well. So I will stick to my guns on Swansea. And I do feel that Southampton probably have more momentum at this stage.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Love the game? Then don't miss The Game Daily. It's your lunchtime update from football's finest writers, and it's only at thetimes.co.uk. We welcome Cardiff City back to the Premier League. Now, this is the second time that they've been up in the Premier League. Obviously, last time around, they had the lovable Malky Mackay and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And of course, the Bluebirds became Redbirds. And we could owe that to Vincent Tan. Remember that whole nonsense? The whole Vincent Tan versus Malky Mackay and the leaked phone taps and that
text.
That nasty, mean law firm who I won't mention, who threatened to sue everybody. And that guy who was like, was it like Vincent Tan's son's friend who came in to advise, and the media just started ridiculing this poor guy, saying he was like, he's actually like the decorator or something.
It was a mess. It was a huge mess.
It was a messy situation, but... Julian, not to out you, but your children are eligible for Wales.
They are indeed. That way. Yep.
Your relatives are Bluebirds.
Season ticket holders.
Tell us about Cardiff.
I think it's been an incredible adventure. I really do. And from the beginning, where no one believed, and they were never in the conversation for going up, despite Warnock's incredible records, you know, as a... Can we call him like a promotioner? Is that? I know we would make a new word in English, but the guy does, that's what he does. He gets promotions. I love these words. He's a promotioner. But no one, you know. And again, we talked before about tactics and man management against tactic management, that kind of stuff. And Warnock, who's 70 in December, I think, he's an old school manager and he can still work. And I think they built this team, not with superstar, not with, you know, the time where they bought Cornelius for £8 million is long gone. And Vincent Tan still has a lot of money and he's still on the scene. But they built this team in a different way, in a way that they could be solid, and how to be in this league, which it's all you need to be. Unless you're Wolves and you have Jorge Mendes and Ruben Neves and people like that, and yeah, you're going to play nice football. The rest, if you're solid and if you're hard to beat, you'll have a chance. And I think they did that. And even when, you know, they got hammered by Aston Villa, and when they thought, okay, they're going to falter now and they're never going to do it. And they mentally, they were so strong and they were very good, and they were not the most entertainment, but they've got 90 points, which is a lot. And Junior Oilet, you know, do you remember Junior?
The pride of Canada and Blackburn.
Yeah. And yeah, there's him, Toronto Raptors and Drake, and that's it, basically. and Justin Bieber, okay. Justin Bieber.
Is Justin Bieber Canadian?
Yeah. Oh, come on.
Steve Nash, I think you'll find, is also Canadian.
Yeah, our friend and Steve, big football fan, soccer fan. 11 goals, top scorer. It's amazing that you go up with a top scorer, 11 goals. And I think, you know what, they deserve it because it's a tough, tough league, and I'm really glad for them.
The way Julian describes them, they sound like hardworking. Warnock obviously has an edge. I've worked with him in the past. He's been good enough to me. He also has a history of a lot of people not liking him, like, say, Jason Puncheon, or that whole nonsense with Nuno that happened when they played Wolves recently. I struggle a little bit in terms of likability with these new people, because these guys don't seem to play nice football, and the people at Wolves don't seem to be very nice people. Or, I'm going to use a different term. Anyway, do some Googling on the people behind Wolves. am I wrong? Like, do I want a team that's just going to be lump and be defensive and top scorer has 11 goals and whatever, and Neil Warnock growling, and that psychopath Bennett on Leroy Sané in the cup, and the reaction? Is this what we have in store, Julian, when these guys come up?
No, I mean, okay, they might not be perfect, either of them, owners, managers. I mean, Neil Warnock has his fair share of controversy this season as well.
Exactly.
They earn it.
I'm not disputing the fact that they earned it, but
so what, you would have rather Fulham because, you know, we like the stadium and it's, you know, it's a nice place to go to and it's a nice walk from the
tube station. It's close to my house.
It's close to your house. You would rather Aston Villa club.
So the teams in the playoffs all have big Premier League pedigrees. Obviously, Fulham with that nice Mr. Khan with the mustache and everything.
And Ryan Sessegnon.
Is he still going to be there next year?
Well, you
think. I hope so. Yeah. I hope we get to see a lot of him. All right, Villa and Dr. Tony, how are Villa doing? Do they have a chance to go up?
Yeah, they almost, like we said, after that win against Cardiff, it looked like they had the momentum, and Steve Bruce is
Who's more of a doctor, Dr. Tony or Dr. Liam Fox?
Oh,
seriously, the guy's a GP and he's in politics. He calls it, he still keeps the title doc, whatever. Sorry, I digress. Sorry. Middlesbrough?
Oh, imagine Pewdie's going up when West Brom go down.
That'd be a story, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And Derby County?
With a bright young English manager.
Gary Rowett, who everybody agreed he was the second coming of Alf Ramsey after he got sacked from Birmingham City. Tremendous history, tremendous sets of fans, and one of those four will go up. All right, enough championship. How about some quick hits instead? Stoke City lose at home to Crystal Palace and are relegated. But goalkeeper Jack Butland had some choice words. He complained about some of the signings, which he says are now dotted around the world. The one signed by the previous manager, Mark Hughes, of course. He didn't name names, but in our story, we speculated, and I think it's kind of obvious, that he may have been referring to Saido Berahino, Janelli Mbula, Kevin Vimmer, and Jesse. Julian, I think all these cases are a little bit different. Is he being fair? Jesse is in, from what I could tell, went back to Spain and was kind of trolling them on social media.
Yeah, but his little baby boy was really ill. Jesse, you know.
When that happened with David Silva, we all felt bad. With Jesse, he became a bad guy. Kevin Vimmer's, I thought, did he have some issue, or is his big problem just that he's not really good at playing football?
I mean, I guess it's probably a bit more of that.
Berahino, he's got a whole laundry list of issues. And what's up with your man Mbula, man?
I mean, even in France now, he's on loan at Toulouse. He's not doing well. They're in the battle against relegation as well.
But we all thought he was good because he's like this kind of like giant with long legs and he could pass the ball. And like,
yeah, I think the problem is more in his head than in his feet. That's the thing.
Right. So he's sort of like a mad version of Nzonzi.
Yeah. Or even Yaya Toure. That kind of, you know, because he's that kind of player.
You mentioned him, Bull and Yaya Toure in the same sentence.
Well, yeah.
Wash your mouth out with soap, my man.
Man, you say Seriously. Nzonzi, he's not. He doesn't play like Nzonzi. He doesn't play the position of Nzonzi. So why are you comparing with Nzonzi?
I'm sorry. Does he play in central midfield?
Does Nzonzi play in central midfield? He's not a defensive midfielder like Nzonzi. He's not holding midfielder. He's a box-to-box midfielder. That's why I gave you a box-to-box midfielder that looked a bit like him. I never even said he was as, you know, good or nowhere near as good as Yaya.
You just said he's more talented than Yaya.
Oh, my God.
All right, so anyway.
So, yeah, Birdland has a point because the recruitment was, you know, probably not good enough, apart from Kurt Zouma, maybe. We all love Kurt with a name like that. But, yeah, they still had, you know, good players who were there before who didn't arrive in the summer that should have done more and were not good enough either. So, no, it's not just the new recruits, the one from last summer, signed by Mark Hughes or anyone else. It's the whole squad. It's the whole team that was not good enough.
It's odd to hear, though, like, To hear a player go and like blame a former coach's signings.
It's, I know.
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. That's how he feels. He may have a very good point. I wish people were more open to speak up. Manchester United lose to Brighton, who are staying up, as we've noted, on Friday. I thought the interesting bit came at the end when Mourinho, he seemed to be annoyed because earlier there were people who were pestering him for starting Lukaku. And now, without Lukaku, United stink it up. Gearbrand, you were there. Is that what he was referring to? And yeah, by implication, are we throwing Rashford under the proverbial... I mean, is the message basically saying, oh, you guys gave me stick for playing Lukaku, now Lukaku's out, and I got to play this fool up front, and we lose?
I mean, I think that was absolutely what he meant. I think he even...
why would you do that?
He even came out and said, I think the exact quote was, now maybe you'll understand why I don't play A, B, or C more often. And I think... Again, it's a little bit like the previous quick hit. A bit of reading between the lines is required, but not much. I think it's fairly obvious that he was referring to Rashford and Martial.
Rashford may not be perfect; he may have been overhyped. But we're talking about, what is he? Is he still 20 years old?
Yeah.
You're talking about a 20-year-old homegrown player who's an England international. How must he feel hearing this?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Martial as well. I mean, I bet...
Martial, you assume he's kind of given up the ghost on, but, I mean, why does he need to do this? Why don't he just take it on the chin and be like, you know what, nobody's going to remember this after I win the FA Cup next weekend, and leave it at that? Arsene Wenger says he's a fan, and he'll miss everybody, and he gets a nice farewell as Arsenal pummel Burnley 5-0, and Aubameyang bags 2 goals. Julian, you can either tell me whether this is the same team who were so awful against Atletico Madrid, or, and I genuinely don't remember, do you want to share your thoughts on the great man leaving?
I'll go for my thought on the great man leaving. I was there on Sunday, and it was a very emotional day. It was a very sad day. It was always going to be. I mean, Burnley was very kind to, you know, stop defending, to make the party even better. And I think he hit people. You know, I saw grown men crying in that stadium yesterday, and I think a lot of people realised that, okay, the last 3-4 years were not maybe, you know, great, but he still did an amazing job for this club for so long. And I think the future is daunting because you don't know who's going to come, you don't know what's going to happen. I thought Wenger was very classy in his speech on the pitch, in his press conference afterwards with us, the journalists. It's a day that will stay forever, I think, in Arsenal fans and Arsenal Football Club's memory, and rightly so. I think Arsene is very scared of what's going to happen next, and we mentioned that a lot on the pod. But I think he got the send-off he deserved. However, there's still 2 away games to go for him, and he's going to be weird at Leicester on Wednesday, where everything's going to feel flat, you know, and he might get, I don't know, some sort of little thing from the Leicester club, I don't know, maybe nothing, and then Huddersfield
maybe
the last game.
Maybe a gift voucher for Thai duty-free shops.
Yes, maybe something like that. But yeah, I think it would have been even better. The only thing that could have better yesterday if that game had been the last one of the season, full stop.
Speaking of Burnley, they've mathematically qualified for Europe. And youngsters, you may not know this, but Burnley years ago played against the likes of Real Madrid and whatnot. Gearbrand, how did they do it?
The short answer would be by defending a lot better than they did yesterday. I mean, that was a real kind of anomaly. But I think... In general, Sean Dyche, as a defensive coach, has been absolutely outstanding. I mean, he's been one of the best defensive coaches in the league.
Do Burnley have a negative goal difference?
What I would point out on the Burnley goal difference thing is that they haven't scored very many and they haven't conceded very many either in sort of relative terms. And the fact that they've been so good defensively has meant that they've been able to get an awful lot of value for the relatively few goals that they've scored. They've won an awful lot of matches 1-0. And I mean, you know, what can we say about Arsenal like that? I mean, you know, he's done.
I want to say this, well. And by the way, I'm going to stop saying this at some point. No, actually, I won't, but it's obvious that nobody really cares. The situation of polarization, of the rich being so much richer than everybody else, this continuous lie that, the great thing about the Premier League is no easy games and da-da-da. Burnley have a negative goal difference, but there's only six teams that have a better goal difference than Burnley. So Arsenal are plus 24. They're sixth in goal difference. Burnley are seventh, and they're minus two. That's a swing of 26 goals. And you want to tell me that this is normal and we should just put up with this? This is not the football that people grew up with. This is not what's normal. Well, you probably did, Gearbrandt, but the rest of us, no, this is not normal. And I don't know. Nobody seems to care, so I'll move on. In fact, much as I'm angry, Mark Hughes is also an angry man. He's likely to face an FA rap after complaining about referee John Moss in a match that saw Southampton work very hard only to concede a late equaliser to Everton, meaning they're still in danger, as we've noted. Julian, do you sympathise with Sparky?
Only it was hard to take, I have to say. I have to give him that. He said John Moss wasn't fit because the linesman didn't flag a foul. Didn't flag a foul, and Moss was 30 yards behind, as usual, as he put it.
It's the linesman's fault, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do your freaking job. You're 5 yards away. Like, show some personality.
Definitely.
Why is it the linesman's fault?
Because he's there to him, and he was right in front of him, and he didn't tell Moss.
But the linesman didn't think it was a foul. I don't.
So it's his fault for getting the decision wrong, because it obviously was a foul.
Oh, okay. I disagree with that.
You don't think it was a foul?
I don't think it was a foul, no. The mistake was compounded by letting them take the free kick, sort of.
Like 10 yards.
But hang on.
So the linesman could have flagged for that, too, by the way.
Yes, good point, yeah.
Right?
So what happened now? If he gets suspended because of his rant.
He won't. I mean, I assume he just get fined, asked to explain his comments, and by that point it's going to be the summer and nobody's going to care.
True, but he's still, you know.
He'll be in the championship, he won't be at the club, and we'll all forget about it. But it when you see stuff like this, when the guy taking the free kick, like 10 yards up the pitch, and he's right there.
Yeah. You're right. But then focus on the good things about your team, though. You know, instead of giving me the whole reason he does this
is they've got a huge game coming up against Swansea, and he wants to send a message to the referees, guys, wakey wakey.
Yeah.
Because we've had some horrendous decisions from people who should be doing better. Whether John Moss is physically fit enough or not, John Moss is not somebody who has an athlete's body, although weirdly, he actually played football to a decent level.
Yeah.
And what's more, they have physical tests that these people have to go through, right? So if John Moss passes the physical tests, he could look like Jabba the Hutt and it wouldn't matter. He gets around the pitch.
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't have said this about, you know, Anthony Taylor, because Anthony Taylor looks like he lives in a gym, whereas John Moss looks like he lives in a donut shop, right? But you know what? Or in the pub. But you know what? It doesn't matter. They're both referees.
Yeah.
I don't think you can attack John Moss for not being fit.
I agree.
In this situation, but you can question.
Yeah.
Maybe he still could have seen that it was 10 yards up the pitch, even if it was 30 yards away, unless he needs to. But the assistant, come on, do your job.
Yeah.
Manchester City are held 0-0 by Huddersfield, and it's a huge point for David Wagner's side, though really Guardiola probably didn't care much since they were celebrating their title in the final home game. Yaya Toure got a massive send-off, and Julian, I know that you'll consider him a poor man's Gianelli Mbula, so I'm not going to turn to you. Gearbrandt, he's been one of my favorite players. You want to give us a little Yaya appreciation?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It does sort of feel like he's one of the sort of great underappreciated players in sort of recent Premier League history. I mean, third league title?
Yeah, in one of those years, I can't remember if it was with Pellegrini or with Mancini, he scored 20 goals that season.
I was just going to say, I can't remember exactly what season it was, but the stats were unbelievable if you look at them. I think he's really appreciated by Man City fans, but just sort of not more widely.
I remember the criticism he got coming over about the fact that, oh, he's so lazy, he runs like an old man, blah, blah, blah. And the dude can play. The guy showed he's not lazy playing a key role as a defensive midfielder after starting his career as an attacking midfielder, right? I don't know. I'm glad he got the send-off.
One for you, Gab. Not much at stake in the Clásico on Sunday night, other than pride, really, but that was more than enough, wasn't it?
Well, other than pride, Julian, and the fact that Barcelona are trying to go the whole season undefeated. Although it's funny because they're not really going the whole season undefeated since they lost to Espanyol and they lost to Roma and they lost to Real Madrid in the Super Cup, of course. But this is a tremendous game filled with events, filled with moments of great skill. Gareth Bale's late equalizer. The opener, Sergio Roberto's perfect textbook pass for Luis Suarez. Great finish from Suarez. There was also Cristiano Ronaldo getting, you know, I don't want anybody to say Cristiano Ronaldo is, well, he pulls out of tackles or he's scared, because to score his goal, he got right in the thick of it and he got an almighty whack in the ankle from Gerard Piqué. We'll know more this week. I assume he'll be fine for the Champions League final, but that was another dubious moment. And I think the other thing was we saw some absolutely horrendous officiating. Referee Alejandro Hernandez. Yeah, not a good day at the office for him. You can't even say that, you know, it's all officiating to favor Real Madrid, because Gareth Bale, I thought, should have been sent off for horrendous, really mean stamp on Umtiti. But then the other way, Marcelo should have had a penalty when in a clash with Jordi Alba. And Luis Suarez, in the build-up, Messi's goal, he basically takes Varane and kind of.
Really, yeah.
It's funny. There's all these French guys who seem to be getting the abuse in this game. So, yeah, I think it was just a really bad match. And the one thing I'm grateful of is that we're not, you know, this isn't the kind of. Hopefully, everybody's going to move on from this and kind of forget about it, because there wasn't much at stake. But in other seasons, you get officiating like that, we would never hear the end of it. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many, many thanks to my excellent guests. It's James Gearbrandt and Julian Lawrence. I thank them for coming in on this Bank Holiday Monday, which, of course, is a holiday here in the Sceptre Dial. Now, remember, just £8 for an 8-week trial. If you want to subscribe to our newspaper, just search for The Times online. You don't just get our newspaper, which I think is very good. You also get The Sunday Times. And you get highlights of every single game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, and the FA Cup. If you liked that night's Johnny Northcroft last week, well, you can read him in the Sunday Times. We're going to be back next Monday after the final day of the Premier League season. Who will be in the top four and who's going down? Till then, bye-bye.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.